Welcome to K-Boot, Karen Shebawick.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, we'll be talking today about key themes in Israelism, a film that is screening in theaters and campuses across the country and coming to Portland on March 18th. The film unfolds around the stories of two filmmakers who produced Israelism and their process of confronting the place of Israel in their own Jewish identities. Karen Shebawick grew up in a Reform Judaism movement in Colorado and is a social worker and active in the queer anti-Zionist community here in Portland and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace Portland. Well, Karen, you visited Palestine, Israel twice as a young person, first with the Birthright program and later as a counselor for a teen trip. An early scene in Israelism centers on the formative experience for the film directors of their Birthright trip. Let's start with your own memories of that visit and how you came to understand that trip to Israel as a formative experience.
So, Birthright had always been a part of the trajectory of many people in my community. It was considered something that most people in my community did. And so when I was 19, I went on a Birthright trip without much thought politically about what that was or what that meant. And it was certainly before my politics had shifted to understand a little bit more about what Zionism is and how it works. I simply knew Zionism as a conflated part of my Judaism. And so going to Israel felt, especially on the Birthright trip, felt like at the time, a key part of my Jewish experience.
Can you say a bit even about the term birthright? I think many people know about the concept and being able to have a trip funded if you're an American Jew. I don't know if that's true for Jews around the world.
Okay, the question of birthright is one, it's based on the concept that Jews somehow have a right to visit the ancestral homeland and to live and occupy the land that is Palestine because of our historical connection to the land,
That this
which
is your true home. You're born into an identity as a Jewish American that also involves this idea of Israel as your home.
And I think folks who hold that belief believe that all Jews have some kind of a right to that land, which, as we know, a lot of people have historical connections to that land.
So, returning to your own memory of your trip, what do you recall?
Wow, so many things. Ironically, Birthright was a catalyst for me in questioning the place of Israel in my Judaism and starting to understand that the story of that land is much more complex than I was told as a child and as a young American Jew growing up in a Zionist bent Reform congregation and Reform movement. And I remember there's one moment in particular that I remember that my trip was visiting the YWCA, or sorry, the YMCA in Jerusalem, which at the time was run by a Palestinian man. It was right around the time that there was a lot of controversy about the wall, and he was talking about how he didn't think that the wall was very effective and that it separated people, not brought them together. And there was an Israeli soldier on our trip. Most Birthright trips, I think all Birthright trips have Israeli soldiers for at least a few of the days that are sort of on vacation from their army service and come and hang out as sort of cultural ambassadors to create strong connections between Israelis and American Jews. And one of those soldiers had been posted at the wall as part of his military service and as part of the Israeli occupation force service that he was serving in, and he left the room because he couldn't handle what this person was saying. And I just remember this deep feeling of, wow, there is more to this story than I have been told. Because if these two people can't even be in the room together when talking about something as simple as coexistence, then there is something much more politically complicated than I was ever given the information about.
So the wall represented both a geographical barrier and boundary and a literal place, but also sounds like came to represent a kind of repression, that which is
Absolutely.
disavowed, disallowed, out of view. And for you, the wall at some point started tumbling down, like the wall of Jericho.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really shifted and pushed me to think about that there was a nation state building a wall between citizens, and I was so confused because I had always been taught that apartheid was not a part of the state of Israel when it absolutely is.
So, can you talk about your process of questioning that story and how you came to see the story of Israel's founding and how you even understand the concept of Zionism? There are different versions of Zionism, and you're part of an anti-Zionist movement and group, Jewish Voice for Peace. How did you come to understand the term Zionism? And what that meant in your own Jewish identity.
It has been a long process, is one thing that I will say. And I think I came to understand Zionism as a subset of the colonial project through a lot of patient space. A lot of people gave me a lot of facts that I did not have access to about how so many Palestinian villages were destroyed in the Nakba. I think oftentimes when we're in conversation about Zionism, especially, we are working off of entirely different definitions. And when American Jews are in conversation with people who have an understanding of Zionism as a part of a colonial project, if they have never, like, if I'm just imagining myself in that conversation, that when people talk about the colonial project, it was frankly confusing, and I didn't have a framework to put it in because I had simply been given facts that were huge lies of omission and completely left out Palestinian history and narrative and the fact that Palestinians existed.
Yeah, I think one of the ironies among many in the accusation that any criticism of Israel is a form of anti-Semitism or among Jewish critics, self-hating, Jews or something along those lines, is that Judaism has been described as a religion and a tradition that produces tremendous curiosity, intellectual debate, two Jews, three opinions. And yet this seems to be shut down with respect to criticism of Israel, even now, amid what many in the world declare to be a genocide. And how do you understand that aspect of how things have unfolded? Given critique is and commentary and disagreement is so integral to Jewish intellectual life.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the tragic parts of the project of Zionism and the way that it colludes with anti-Semitism and colonialism, because I think the collusion of anti-Semitism and Zionism has made Jews afraid. And like I said, I grew up with this really intense fear that if Israel did not exist as a nation state, somehow I wouldn't be safe as a Jew. Which, as we think through the logic, and especially as I now know so many more facts, that it doesn't make any sense. I especially these days, when people talk about Jewish safety, I really have the question of, well, why can't we be safe here? Like, why are we not working on me having access to safety in the place that I live? There are Jews all over the world, and we deserve safety exactly where we are. That's sort of a side note, but how I understand that, in my opinion, tragic lack of engagement in the complexity in Jewish community and lack of acknowledgement in the Jewish community is because not is not because of anything inherent in Judaism itself. That Judaism does, like you said, encourage intellectual debate and complexity and engagement with that. But Zionism, which is separate, has claimed that Jewish safety is tied to the survival of the nation state and has used anti-Semitism as a shield, essentially, to say everyone should be afraid of anti-Semitism and everyone should be afraid of anti-Israel rhetoric.
That makes Jews unsafe inherently. And I think it's interesting now the reports coming out of what's called rampant anti-Semitism on campuses. Most of the findings in those reports are based on Jewish students who say they feel anxious or they feel unsafe at these pro-Palestine rallies rather than actual anti-Semitic actions or incidents. How do you respond to that concern about many Jewish students reporting feeling uncomfortable or anxious or worried about anti-Semitism with the war unfolding at the scale that we're seeing and the level of horror we're seeing?
I think my response, especially to those students, is to say we need to focus on what is important here. And of course, the feeling of being unsafe is not one that is fun. It is not easy to engage with, and it's something that we need to address, but we need to acknowledge the real root of the problem. The real root of the problem is not that people are asking for liberation and that Palestinians deserve liberation. The root of the problem is Zionism and the oppression faced by Palestinians and perpetuated by the State of Israel and by the Zionist movement.
Maybe there's something to that feeling, though, of like you were saying at the beginning, the wall started coming down, and their identification with something important and vital in their own identity is challenged. It can be very distressing and unsettling.
Absolutely. It is distressing and unsettling. And I would say I've been trying to use the metaphor of talking to people about anti-racist work when we're talking about anti-Zionist work, because in the same way that there was national conversation in 2020 about how uncomfortable it is for white people who have never thought about race before. And, I count myself among people who went through over the course of my life, lots of uncomfortable feelings about race as a white person. And the spaces to talk about racism, for example, for me to process my white feelings about racism is not appropriate with people of color. And in the same way, for Jews to process our big feelings about the way Zionism has hurt us and has made us feel unsafe is an important conversation, but not one to have with Palestinian folks, not one to have on the international scale, because as is usual with anti-Semitic cycles and with the cycle of anti-Semitism often serves as a distraction from other oppressions. And that we're seeing that come to play right now, that anti-Semitism is being used as a distracting force to say, let's pay attention to the ways that Jews are feeling unsafe instead of the ways that Palestinians are being actively genocided.
It was a point you made at a recent session with Multnomah County commissioners, and where there was moving testimony, some by members of Jewish Voice for Peace, some by members of the local Muslim community and Palestinian activists, and that one of the commissioners gave a speech on how the suffering of her family and the problem of anti-Semitism must be addressed alongside calls for a ceasefire. What did you try to communicate to that commissioner? Because you said you felt her anguish. You were more empathic than some of the other activists there in saying you can understand how difficult this is, especially if you have are a descendant of Holocaust survivors, though many of the most committed anti-Zionists in this movement are descendants of Holocaust survivors, draw very different lessons from the Holocaust.
Absolutely. And I think what I was attempting to communicate is sort of what I just said, that using anti-Semitism as a distraction is not an appropriate response right now. There's an act of genocide going on. We, especially as Jews, need to stand, and we know the implications of genocide. We, as a people, contain that in our bones. And we know the power also of people standing up and saying this is not okay. And so it's our turn to do that. It's our obligation, it's our moral obligation to do that and to put aside whatever feelings that we have or work through them so that we can show up for the Palestinian community. And so I just want to lift up also the work that If Not Now does, which I think is a really beautiful organization nationally that sort of focuses on that and targets American Jews to envelop them in the movement and say, we are going to organize as Jews to stand up for Palestinian liberation. And some of the work, it's all very action focused. And some of the ethos behind that is that Jews do need a Jewish space to process through what is going on for unlearning Zionism, but that does not have to be one that occupies international space.
And along those same lines, can you talk about the place of queer activists and activism in the anti-Zionist movement? You identify as a queer anti-Zionist Jewish activist, and some of the traditions that are confronted in this movement are not friendly to queer politics. So, as is true in many places in the world, how do you see the place of queer activism in the anti-war peace and justice movement, as well as specifically anti-Zionist politics?
I think queer politics stand on the shoulders of many, many generations of queer folks, primarily Black and Brown trans folks that have really led the way in supporting solidarity movements. But I think one thing that stands out to me in queer anti-Zionist work is combating what's called pinkwashing. The way that Zionism and the state of Israel uses queer rights to mask other human rights violations. So things like highlighting the Tel Aviv Pride parade as a form of showing, wow, look how great we are at human rights. Don't look over here where we're actively imprisoning 2 million Gazans and genociding an entire people. The way that queer liberation is intersected feels very clear to me, and especially the way that queer liberation has been co-opted by the Zionist movement and attempted to use as another distraction.
Life in Tel Aviv is pretty attractive when you just zoom in on it. and background a lot of what's behind the walls, and also in Israeli prisons, all of the young people who are swept up in Israeli prisons without clear charges and without legal representation. Well, let's close out by talking a bit about the screening coming up. Israelism is a very interesting film, follows some of your journey as well, and coming to terms with the legacy of Zionism and working to ground Jewish identity and the history of the Holocaust now in a different concept of justice than Israel represents. That's screening at the Clinton Street Theater Monday evening, the March 18th. It's being sponsored by a number of local groups, including Jewish Voice for Peace, Portland's DSA, and the Portland chapter of Veterans for Peace. How can we find out more about the local activism and work of Jewish Voice for Peace?
Please follow JVP on Instagram. If you're a social media person, JVP PDX. You can go to jvpportland.org and find out more ways to get involved and ask around. Be calling your representatives every day if you can. There's lots of great ways to do that. One of them is on the JVP website, but don't turn away. There's an act of genocide happening, so get involved.
And you also are involved as a singer, and engaged in the what some call the resilience side of movements that can bring people into a lot of distress and confronting pain and horror, and how to draw on traditions of song and ritual that have an important place in sustaining activism. Can you say a bit about that as we close?
Absolutely. I think that one of many roles that I've dabbled in movements is to help build our communal resilience, which I think is really key, and especially Jewish anti-Zionist communal resilience in the face of a really deep Zionist culture in Jewish American spaces. So I believe in building more of that community so that we can support the liberation work of Palestinian leaders.
And it's reclaiming in the same way the civil rights movement and so many movements do, reclaiming sometimes liturgy, song, ritual practices through a liberation lens.
Absolutely. I'm hoping that we can continue to declare that Judaism at its core is a beautiful tradition that is not the same as Zionism, and that Zionism is not welcome in Jewish spaces.
Thank you so much for being with us today. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This is Jan Hawken talking with Karen Shebowick. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jan.
Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Listen, my people, our voices and bodies are one. Lifting voices together, we know that our work's just begun. Listen, my people, our voices and bodies are one. Lifting voices together, we know that our work's just begun.
Shema Yisrael Adonai Elohim.